excuse me for my voice, but I have never, never seen anything like it. On the road again.
If we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive. We're the best
of friends. Moron, your bus is leaving.
Welcome to this Oregon edition of the On the Road Home podcast. This is Ken Crawford reporting to you on the road home from the Oregon game. We're going to try something a little bit different today. Normally you get my very analytical, calm, composed analysis of the game. But today, we're just gonna have a good time! What a game. What a game. I mean, come on. This is why you're a football fan. This is why you're a college football fan. And I'm soaked to the bone. I'm deliriously sore-throated. I'm holding together better than I thought I would. I'm cold, and I couldn't be happier. What a game. I mean, I think even if you're an Oregon fan, you have to walk away from that game thinking, that was a great game. That was a lot of fun. There were mistakes on both sides. Neither team was perfect. Cal had plenty of mistakes that, I mean, should be worrisome to Bear fans everywhere, but so did Oregon. So, I mean, it all equaled out in the end. I mean, and that's just great football. I felt the same way after last year's Oregon game, after that, you know, final play, and I'm sure it feels very different on the other side of the ball. But I did talk to Oregon fans after last year's game who did verify that same thought for me, that they looked at that game and they said, that was one hell of a game. We're heartbroken. But it was a hell of a game. Back and forth and good execution in a lot of parts of the game. I mean, mistakes here and there, but a lot of great execution. And really, geez, I'm so glad I went to that game. This is the first game that I've taken neither my wife nor my children to in, I don't know how long. In fact, perhaps since my first son was born. There have been the night games at 7 p.m. that we don't take the kids to because they're going to be up, you know, way, way past their bedtime. Game will barely have started. But Wendy goes, my wife. And then all the rest of the games, we bring the boys. I even brought them to the USC game last year, although we had to end up leaving at halftime because they were cold and miserable. And they were at this year's rain game and did pretty well. But today's game was, from the get-go, very obviously going to be really nasty weather. And I just couldn't, in my heart, subject my family to that game. I mean, I was going. I know you guys who were listening who have tickets, you were going. You were asking people if they were selling their tickets. And that's why you go. Because even though you're cold, even though it's raining, even though it's a little bit miserable, it's a great game to go watch. And to be honest, there's no game on the schedule these days that I look forward more to than the Oregon game. Because it's always this way. Even when Cal blew out Oregon in 2006, it was a great atmosphere. Even in 2005, when the Bears couldn't put it together to save their lives, they managed to play pretty darn well for Oregon and make that a great game, even though the Bears lost. 2003, the same story. 2004, I mean, this really is, if you want the one game on the schedule that you can count on, it's going to be a good game, Oregon is it. And I'm just thrilled as can be the Bears won. It was so much fun. I will remember this game for a very long time. So, woo! I mean, come on, what a game! All right. Now let's try to take things down a notch and talk about how they played. As I look at this game, I don't think there's anything you can take away from this game whatsoever. I mean, it was rainy, it was nasty. What you can tell a little bit about is the heart of the team. There were two or three times in this game where they could have put their chips down and gone home. But they came to play. They got back on the horse. Whatever analogy you want to use, the Bears got back up or whatever. They came to play. And that was very evident. In fact, I think actually that's probably what won them the game overall. And probably they wouldn't have won that game in Eugene, because I think the fans really helped them get up for the game. So it was all about the heart. It was all about the effort. Do you see anything in that game that you can say, oh, yeah, well, this means Cal has a good pass defense? Because, I mean, I don't even know. I don't look at the stats before I get in the car. I'm sure they didn't throw for squat passing-wise. And give credit to Longshore. He can play in the rain. Right? People have said that he can't. He looked, you know, obviously Riley did not come out because of his performance, because he was getting in rhythm. He was getting there, and I think he would have performed admirably. But Longshore performed great. There were very few moments that you looked at him and you said, he's not performing well in the rain. He hit his receivers, and the receivers did a great job today. They played with heart. They caught the ball. There were only one or two that they missed. And, you know, even of those few that they missed, most of them were pretty tough catches. There was the one that kind of bounced through the breadbasket. I think it was Tucker on a swing-out pattern, but... I mean, other than that, you know, Cunningham's miss in the end zone. He had to go way up for that in a ball that had a fair amount of velocity on it. That's not an easy ball to catch. And there weren't that many others. The Bears caught most of those balls. So, you know, I know that the safe thing to do is keep the ball on the ground in this situation. And that's why there wasn't as much passing as there could have been. But the Bears were very effective through the air because Oregon was so committed to stopping the run. And when they passed well. There were very few moments that you said, well, even though Oregon's stacking the box, maybe we should run it because our passing game sucks, which Oregon could say that numerous times. There were plenty of instances where, you know, they wanted to throw the ball, but it didn't matter. They couldn't pass, in part because of Cal's zone coverage was really confusing Mazzulli, but also in part because Mazzulli's really young, really inexperienced, and you put him in a hostile environment in the rain against a team that's throwing a unique zone at him, and he's struggling. And, I mean, there's just nothing you can expect from him in that regard. So one thing I think that clearly was an issue, and I'll be interested to hear more about this, is Best with the brace fumbling the ball. Fumbled the ball twice in the first half. And I didn't see anything on his brace that indicated otherwise. Maybe it was just a technique change that he needed. But clearly he was struggling with the brace and holding on to the ball. Both times it was knocked out, it was in his brace hand. And I was a little bit curious why they weren't telling him, you know, just hold it in the other hand. Maybe he just feels so much more comfortable with his right. But I would not be surprised if they, you know, added some sticky tape or something like that to help him hold on to the ball with the brace in his hand. Vereen played very well today. He had that one fumble. I've never seen a fumble shoot so high in the air. I mean, so in some degree, you know, you can't blame him. If he gets hit so hard that the ball flies 15, 20 feet in the air, you know, it's hard to pin that on the back. But other than that, he played great. He still has that instinct, that those skills, that when he gets hit, he's falling forward. He's getting the 2 yards that he shouldn't get, where Best doesn't always get those 2 yards. And it's the one thing I still really like about Vereen is he's falling forward. He's slipping out of a tackle just enough that it's not a 2 yard gain, it's a 4 yard gain. And that makes a big difference when you're in between the tackles. On defense, there were, of course, the moments where they weren't playing all that well. And the one thing that was hurting them on defense is when they couldn't seal the edge. That's when Oregon had a lot of success. And when they were doing it, then Cal was overemphasizing trying to put someone on the edge, and they'd bust one up the middle that they couldn't get. So the key to the defense being successful and when they were successful was when they could seal the edge without overemphasizing. And they did that a lot. For the vast majority of the game, I think the 3-4 was a very good formation for that situation. But when they struggled, it was because they couldn't get to the edge. And actually, Oregon was bringing a lot of blockers. You'd see this like bulge of like four of them coming across the formation, couple of guards pulling or something. I'll be interested to look at it on film to see just how many people they were coming across. But they were bringing a lot of guys. And when that happened, Cal couldn't seal the edge, and they'd get some big runs out of it. But Cal did something. I need to watch the film, that they balanced that out, that they found a way to penetrate and not allow them to pull so many players into to go running with the receiver. And then it just got late in the game, and they were in a throwing situation, and Mazzulli just didn't have it. They brought Roper into the game, and he didn't have it either. So that's what it came down to. And that was kind of my analysis ahead of time, was that it was all about whether Cal could stop the running game. And sure enough, that's exactly what it came down to. When they were stopping the running game, Oregon was amazingly ineffective. And when Oregon could run the ball, they actually get down the field surprisingly fast. So I think that's the key when you're playing the running spread. You got to stop the running game and then do it in a way that you're not over-sacrificing the pass. And Cal's zone on the outside, maybe I can put up a post this week on this, but Cal's zone on the outside was great, particularly against a quarterback who doesn't know how to thread that needle. They were giving up, you know, players from one zone to the next, and they were covered right away, and they made it really difficult on Oregon. So they did a great job. Don't underestimate Oregon as a team. This was not a case where Cal held on as a vastly superior team. This is a time when they played with heart, they played with determination, and really did a great job. And what did it come down to? It came down to holding on to the ball, forcing those couple of turnovers. It was interesting to note that all of the turnovers that Oregon had put up points for Cal, right? There was the, if you call, can call it a turnover, there was the safety where the ball went over the head of the punter. There was the interception that got the ball down to the 3-yard line, and Worrell Williams wishing he had shed 10 pounds in the offseason, because he would have got there if he had just been a little bit lighter and on his feet. He just couldn't quite get there. And then, of course, the punt return that was dropped, and Cal got inside the red zone. So they, I mean, of their 26 points, right, there's 16 of them right there. Oregon, on the other hand, I mean, they got given a ton of opportunities, and they didn't score on most of them. You know, Best fumbled twice, once actually pretty close in Cal's zone. I don't remember if they got points off of that one. They might have. Best second one, because it was way down the field, they didn't get any points on. Vereen's, I'm pretty sure they held him on that one, too. And then the interception, I think actually the interception went for a touchdown. So, you know, it's not that Oregon didn't execute at all, but they had 4 turnovers, real turnovers, you know, not the type Cal had, kind of, you know, intermediary turnovers, but they did get 2 balls right down to the goal line on the turnovers, so that's a bit of an advantage. Other areas, it clearly took Anger a little while to adjust to the wet conditions and to drop the ball right and to punt the ball well. I mean, he had some pretty kind of mediocre punts there. I know that there was some pressure coming up the middle, and that might have been frustrating him or flustering him. He says he doesn't look at it, but says and doesn't are 2 different things. Of course, Tavecchio did great. He had the one kick where his foot, I wasn't sure, but the way he kicked it, it sure looked like his plant foot slipped, and he just, you know, whiffed through it and kind of pulled it hard because his foot slipped. And then, of course, the other one that was missed was Longshore's fault, bobbled it. But clearly, I mean, it was tough conditions. Oregon did the same thing. They missed an extra point the same way and also pulled one. It wasn't quite as bad as Tavecchio's pull, but I'm sure the conditions played into that. And guess what? Tavecchio got one from pretty much the same spot, and he was on the bad side of that puddle over there. I have never seen that artificial turf. In fact, I'm sure of it. That's the worst condition that artificial turf has ever been in. Puddle-wise. I mean, it was really, really puddling up on the north side of the field, particularly the east north side of the field. Along those lines, and this is just stream of consciousness stuff, but during one of the commercial breaks, the guys come out with like some shovels and pickaxes and something into the turf in the one corner, and I'm curious if there's a drain there or something, because there's, I mean, it's like a carpet. It's not something you can you know, tear apart like that. I'm sure that was not good for the turf. So there must have been a drain underneath that they believed was clogged or something like that, because they were going at it like they were trying to pull leaves out of a drain. And I'm not sure what was going on there. So I know when they used to have the flat grass field, there was a really deep gravel thingamabobber underneath that allowed the water to drain, even though it was a flat field. And I'm curious if they've still got something like that going or some drain systems going, and they were trying to expose those to get the water draining better. Whatever they did, it didn't help, because that side was puddled the entire game, even after their work, which was sometime in the third quarter, I believe. Other things to talk about? The Longshore versus Riley thing? Boy, Coach Tedford doesn't get a break. I mean, he didn't, you know, want to play Longshore. I'm sure that was just that Riley got really shaken up and his hand was hurting and perhaps a concussion or something. I mean, he looked pretty rattled after that play. So I'm sure that was just, nope, you're done. You're looking unhealthy. And Longshore's going in. If he plays well, he's going to stay in. So you just can't get a break. You know, now he's got, yet again, who's starting next Saturday? I mean, if Riley had played the whole game, they'd won just like they did. Now it would finally have been starting to settle in of, okay, Riley's the starter, but he doesn't get a break at all. So looking forward on the schedule, next week is the trip to USC. And I'll be honest, particularly, nothing about today changes my opinion. The Bears are a long, long, long shot to win that game. In the Pick'em League, I think I'm going to have to pick against them. I don't like picking against them because I hate having incentive for the Bears to lose. But I just can't see them pulling out that game. Yes, USC isn't as good as they've been in years past, but their defense is dominating this year, just impressively dominating this year. And I got to believe that they're going to pull out the victory over the Bears as much as I don't want it to be the case. But as we said in the group podcast earlier this week, if they could go 1-2 through this three-game stretch, I think they'd meet expectations. Well, they already got the one. And so now, even if they go down next week, as long as they put up a good effort, they don't look like they've totally collapsed, they can then go to Corvallis, win that game, and exceed expectations. I think this team is showing the kind of heart that'll give them that. They're going to need to play with heart in Corvallis. And if anything, you know, having a game like this teaches them a little bit about the rain. So if we get some nasty conditions up in Corvallis, it shouldn't be too much of a problem. And then, of course, you've got Stanford and Washington, both at home after that. And I think, actually, that Stanford is the dangerous one. There's a little bit of a danger in Washington in this Wilmingham's last game, and players always seem to get up to give their coach a victory on his way out. But the team's bad enough. I don't think it's going to matter. They're so beat down at this point, and that's how it is. But Stanford, particularly if they are not bowl eligible yet, and chances are they're not going to be bowl eligible. They're playing USC this weekend. They're playing Oregon next weekend. And then they've got Cal after that. They currently have 5 wins. They need a 6th. So they're going to come into the big game not only wanting to keep the X, not only wanting to keep the pride, but also to be bowl eligible. And that's the game it's got to happen at. It would almost be to Cal's benefit for them to pull some sort of an upset, like, say, against Oregon. Which I think they could beat Oregon. It'd be a tough game for them, but I think they could do it. I'm not, you know, going to put the odds on it, but I think they could do it. Particularly if the game were at home, and it's not. It's in Eugene. So the one thing I'll say about Stanford is they play vastly differently at home. That's why they can beat the Beavers at home, but they're losing to UCLA in the Rose Bowl. They've come up with a pretty good home field advantage. The tin can in Palo Alto makes a lot of noise when those students get stomping their feet on the upper deck. And they, you know, are really feeding off the fact that they've got fans now. Who would have thought? For good news for the Bears is this game's in Berkeley. It's not in Palo Alto. And I think that will make a big difference. Remember, Cal's only giving 10,000, 15,000 seats to Stanford. And so you're going to see a lot less fans in this big game than you've ever seen before. This will be mostly Bears fans. They won't have the extra sections they usually do. But it's all about next week now. I think the good news is the team thinks they can beat USC. And that's an important thing. You never want a team that feels there's a game they can't win. And, you know, even if they lose, having that heart and leaving it on the field is good. Because then the following week they can say, you know, we played with heart and we can get up for the next game and rebound. Whereas if you come out and you play flat, and let's say you lose by 3, and you know that if you had come to play that you might have won that game, the implications for that are huge. And I think that really hurt the Bears last year. Part of the reason they lost to Stanford was they knew they left it on the field at Washington. They knew they shouldn't have lost that game. And that really hurt them. So Cal's got to play with heart next week to keep the good mojo going. They don't have to win. They just have to play hard. If for some reason they can pull the upset, Cal is in an excellent position. There is no team in the Pac-10 in a better position than Cal, because guess what? Unlike Oregon State, who also beat USC, we've already beat Oregon, we've already beat ASU, and although OSU has the advantage of having already beaten USC, they haven't played Oregon, they haven't played Arizona, and in fact that game might be this week, and is a big deal. The good news for the Bears is right now they don't have to worry about Arizona because they've got 2 conference losses. And that's huge. That's huge for the Bears because they don't have the blemish of that on their record. I think that wraps it up for this edition of the On the Road Home podcast. Hopefully Jason, Phil, and I can get together again in the middle of the week for that podcast. Also, you will hear my BearTerritory.net podcast on Wednesday. And, of course, my On the Road Home podcast from USC next week, which has the particular benefit of post-game interview quotes from coaches and players, because I will be going down to that game and reporting on it from the press box for BearTerritory.net. So, listen for all those podcasts. I also hope to have some posts about various formations that were difficult or good for the Bears in this game over the next week. Thank you for listening. On the road again.